This episode of the Love Know-It-Alls is sponsored by our friends over at SeatGeek. They've got a great offer for our listeners. You can get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase with the promo code Rob. You know, SeatGeek is great for finding tickets for an event, whether it's a Valentine's Day present or you want to surprise a date with tickets to a concert or event they want to see. Another great idea. Buying tickets to concerts and sporting events can be complicated and confusing, just like dating, but there's a better way to buy. That's with SeatGeek, because SeatGeek is the smartest and easiest way to get tickets for every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or finding the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, and they're fully guaranteed. There's nothing like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek is going to get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever, and SeatGeek is going to save you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek is going to grade every ticket based on value to help you immediately find the best seats to fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. For our listeners, again, that $20 promo code. Download the SeatGeek app. Enter promo code Rob today. That's promo code Rob for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
Hey, did you hear Rob and Steven have a new podcast?
Wait, you mean those guys from Know-It-Alls?
Yep, now they're Love Know-It-Alls.
No way.
Yeah, and they need a new theme song.
I'm pretty sure we could take care of that for them.
Let's do it.
The hottest guys around, they're about to break it down, like they've scored a million times before.
Oh, wait. I thought I was calling into Loveline?
The Love Know-It-All. The Love Know-It-All.
Yes.
Wait, I just want to tell all the listeners that Steven and Rob bobbed their heads to that song.
Yes.
And they're listening.
You were
to
bopping.
It.
You were bopping. You were encouraging
thanks
my bopping,
Steve.
Sophie.
Love you, babe.
Rob
yes.
wasn't
love
bopping for a while.
Babe.
I thought that was
he
weird.
Started to bop at the end.
Yes. Okay. All right. Got to get into it. Got to get up, as Sophie Clark is going to reveal all of her dating secrets, just like she's revealing all of the production secrets for Dating Know-It-Alls.
Yeah, really.
Oh my God.
Peeking behind the curtain.
Yeah. I feel like Coach and Sophie just blew up my spot at Final Tribal Council. Said I'm like a little girl.
That's my go-to.
Yes.
I'm very nervous about this, guys. I'm surprised you guys asked me. I want to know who backed out.
Nobody backed out. Sophie was part of the original concept that we came up with when we were storyboarding this whole season of Love Know-It-Alls. He said, okay, and then we'll get Sophie.
Yeah, I know. I was looking at your previous guests and I was trying to figure out like how you had cast them all, and kind of they all fall, you know, Natalie was obviously like the Tinder guru, and, you know, Bryce has his own demographic that he speaks to. He was like the only gay guy I think you guys have odd on. And I was desperately grasping at straws to try to figure out what box I checked.
Well, if you know classic story structure, like classic three-act story structure, right before the dramatic finale, which is next week, there's like a low point, which is typically like in a lot of stories, like someone dies. So that's this episode.
Okay, got it. That's good.
This is the
lowering
low point.
Expectations.
Yeah.
I actually, I was going over like MBTIs with somebody recently, and we were kind of looking through kind of each of our MBTIs, and I was looking at my relationship section. And the relationship section for an INTJ is basically like, don't even try. This is your biggest weakness. Like, this is getting in a relationship for an INTJ is going to be the hardest thing you ever do in your entire life. Mm-hmm. So I just feel like that should be my caption on this whole podcast.
Well, that's why you're perfect. You can apply all of the strategy you've learned to actually get in a relationship. You know, you can help our listeners out.
That's true. So, it is harder for me.
Myers-Briggs personality test. That's EDGIC, right, Sophie?
Yeah, it's like EDGIC for people.
So do you subscribe to that? Is that something that you would really look at with somebody that you would go on a date with?
Yeah, actually it is. And people ask me sometimes, I think I've often described why ex-boyfriends haven't worked out in the terms of MBTI. Specifically, I can think of one where I just know that kind of the fundamental problem between us was that he was an S and I was an N. And that like
an S or an S?
I know. What was I doing hanging with S? Like, I do think that like MBTIs, especially when you know your own well, it kind of helps you be really introspective. And I think that's often what's at the core of being a successful person who dates or is in a relationship, is knowing yourself really well and knowing your partner really well and knowing kind of the source of any kind of troubles or the source of your strengths. And I feel like MBTI is like one of many ways to kind of get to that answer.
For me, the difference between S and N is like the biggest difference that you can possibly have.
Well, S's are idiots.
I just want to take one step backwards, because you guys are off to the races with Myers-Briggs, but I think that there's probably a portion of our listeners who may not be familiar with what that is. Stephen, could you give us a synopsis of the Myers-Briggs personality chart?
Yeah, it's basically a personality test that ranks you. You have an extensive battery of questions, and then you get ranked on four primary characteristics. Are you introverted or are you extroverted? Are you intuitive or are you sensory? Are you thinking or are you feeling? And then are you what's P? Are you perceiving or are you judging? And so that sounds somewhat simplistic, but actually the way that your like four key personality types or your four key character traits interact allows for what they have created as 16 different profiles. So Sophie, I'm INTP, which is, I think, the architect. Sophie is an INTJ, which... No, that's the architect.
Mastermind.
Well, you're the mastermind.
Mastermind, architect. INTP is, I think, the logician.
Logician, right. The logician. INTJ.
How do you
is
know Sophie's test results?
I can just tell just by looking at her. No, we've talked about it before. And she also just said it.
Okay. Sophie.
I paid attention.
Sophie, will you have a guy take the Myers-Briggs personality test, or will you be able to just talk to the guy and then you can just fill it out for him when you get home?
Well, I feel like I'm a bit of like one of those freaks at a freak show that is able to kind of look at somebody and tell them their weight and their height. So mm-hmm. I don't think that there's usually, if I've been dating somebody, I'm able to kind of figure out what their Myers-Briggs likely is. I think if I was mm-hmm. having trouble, I would definitely want to know. The reason I think it's really important is, I mean, it's important for like friendships and relationships and work relationships. But if you think of people as like, I feel like this is like a very common analogy, but if you think of people as an iceberg and you're like hitting the top of the iceberg and you're having problems, and it's whether it's like, you know, who's washing the dishes or whatever the small problem might be, it's usually just like the tip of some like larger, not necessarily problem, but like characteristic or personality trait of that person. Or like, it's usually the tip of like something, there's something motivating it. It's not just, an iceberg isn't just what's sticking out of the water. There's something like way, way beneath it. And I feel like with Myers-Briggs, especially in relationships, it helps me when you understand why somebody might be acting that way, it's easier to like accept it or not accept it rather than like just get frustrated that you're hitting the iceberg.
And Sophie, do you know what type of guy that you're looking for, or do you want somebody who's exactly the same as you?
Yeah. So as Stephen and I were saying, I think S's are like, I think S and N, at least for me, is a really big difference. And as an N, I find
Stephen
like
loves
S's drive me nuts. But I definitely, I think you can look it up. It's kind of like horoscopes. It will tell you like INTJ is okay. Like, you know, these types of people are really good for you. So like an example is I'm a very strong T, which means that I'm very logical and I like to think through things. And my boyfriend is a super, super strong F. And so he responds like very emotionally to things. And at times that can like be the source of our problems. He's right here looking at me. And at other times, I think it like helps balance you out. So it's kind of like, I don't know, like Leos and Cancers or, you know, but for people with brains.
I've actually found it to be incredibly helpful in my own life, because when I took the test and I found out I was an INTP and I read about the qualities of INTPs, I learned so much about myself that I could then balance my behaviors against what I knew my instincts were. For example, like I know that INTPs never feel like they have enough information before they reach a decision. They always want to be constantly gathering more information. And I like knowing that I'll never feel like I'm adequately informed, I therefore am able to like, you know, force myself to make decisions more easily. What do we think?
Never stopped me before.
Yeah. Rob is, I would say ENTP, it would be my guess.
Yeah, I feel like I've taken it a couple times and I feel like I got different results from different tests, but
well, ENTP. It's not a static thing. It's not. Yeah. You're an extrovert, right?
No, see, I think I'm pretty introverted. I think that I actually think that I came up INTJ also. I think that that's what I had. That sounds familiar. But then I think I took it on another side and I was something different.
I would guess I you could be an F, though. You're a sensitive guy.
Sometimes. Steven, or do you have a site that you subscribe to that you say that this is the best site to go to if anybody wants to take this personality test?
I don't. I just Google Myers-Briggs personality. Do you have one, Sophie?
I'm trying to look. I actually often recommend people not to take the test, but to just read the descriptions. There's a website called, looking at it now, that just has really, really detailed descriptions, like more than just a paragraph. And I find that most people, when they read them, 16 personalities, it's called, I think.
Yeah.
Most people, when they read them, they're like, oh, yeah, that is totally me. Like, you really, it kind of clicks once you read it. So I think that's just as good as taking the test. And I totally agree with Steven about the dating thing. Like, I remember I was online dating for a while, and I just felt like it wasn't right for me. It wasn't working. And I remember one of the things that I always had in the back of my head was knowing my Myers-Briggs and reading kind of about me and relationships in Myers-Briggs. One of the things it said is about INTJs. I can't remember the exact terminology, and I'll probably make it sound a lot better than it was. But it's like, you're such a strong personality, but you can be so – the combination of like the strong personality with – the strong personality, like the intensity, but with the introversion, means that like you're best at attracting people when you're not trying to attract people. Like when you're just in your element, like that's when you shine and other people are attracted to you. And when you're like put in some kind of faux dating scene, it doesn't work for you. There we go. So, I mean, that was really useful for me because I was like, I'm not going to find somebody necessarily like going on a date with them one evening that we've set up. Like, I think I should, you know, focus on me and it will happen.
So people should come and watch you at work.
Exactly.
Okay. Interesting. All right. So does
Nicole just sit in the corner sometimes and watch you? And she's like, oh, man.
Never. I don't know what
no, but it was Survivor, right? Like she wasn't into him until she saw him on Survivor.
Yeah, she saw me at work and then she said, aha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then since then was nothing. No attraction. But anyway, Sophie, we like to get the background on people. So Myers-Briggs, that's important to you, that we know you're in a great relationship now. How do you normally meet people besides finding out what personality type they are?
So I was thinking about this before I came on here. And one thing I realized is that all of my long-term relationships I've ever been in and any relationship that I've cared about, that it's never been somebody that I met online. I've always met them through like doing something, whether it was like playing on a soccer game with them or, you know, at work or kind of, it's always been in some situation that was meant to be something else and it turned into dating. And so I think that might be unusual, like based on kind of Natalie and Bryce, it seemed like there was a lot of online dating talk in the show. So I think I truly believe the whole, like when people say to me, oh, like set me up someone, I'm trying to do something. I believe it when I'm like, oh, you should go and volunteer or you should go to an art opening. Like those are the kind of situations I truly believe that you can meet somebody in. And I think a lot of people see that with skepticism.
Steven, are you ready with this week's first question for the Love Know-It-Alls and Sophie G. Clark?
Ooh.
Yeah. Janice wants some first date tactics. Per Steven's suggestion of OkCupid, I joined the site and I have been talking to this guy and we are making plans to get dinner at an Italian restaurant. Any advice for going on a first date? I can be super anxious and nervous and I find it hard to think of things to say at times. Any advice is much appreciated. If it helps, we are an 81% match.
Is that good? Is that good?
Mm.
No?
It's okay.
So-so.
It's better than less than that.
Yeah. First off, yeah. Italian restaurant, terrible first date.
What? Why?
You could get sauce everywhere. You got to be very particular.
It sounded saucy to me.
Yes, there's a lot of sauce. And it's also you could eat like a gavone and eat just way too much and get way too full. I think that Italian is a bad first date, Sophie.
I think one of the keys to a first date is the exit strategy. And I don't know much about this woman. Maybe she's older and maybe this makes sense. But like I would be very nervous about going to an Italian restaurant or any restaurant as a first date. I would want to stick with like a bar or something where it was a little easier to extradite myself.
Guys, she is going to an Italian restaurant. She's already anxious and nervous. Our job is not to make her more anxious and nervous.
Can she do anything at this point? Is it too late to abort the Italian restaurant? Yeah,
just get it all out of the way. Spill sauce over yourself just at the get-go. And then, you know, you've got a smooth sailing from there. No, so Janice has some trouble coming up with conversation topics. Sometimes I go in before a date you know, trying to think of a few interesting things that I've seen or thought throughout the day or the previous days that I could bring up if the conversation flags.
Interesting. So you're like a talk show guest and, you know, you've got like a go-to stories that you're ready to like, you know, actually I was on vacation in Vancouver and then a funny thing happened. So you're ready to go.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like not, I mean, it's not like just like me telling like stories. It's like something interesting, you know. Yeah. I mean, I get nervous and anxious on dates too. So I have often found if I have like a few things in my head that I are like my, you know, life preservers. If I get in trouble, you know, I feel a little bit more comfortable just knowing they're there if things go sour.
Okay.
I totally agree, Stephen. I do the same thing. It doesn't even necessarily have to be a date, but like anytime I'm like nervous about having to meet with somebody, even if it's like networking or for coffee or anything, I have a lot of advice for this person. So one is I would definitely write down conversation topics. Like you don't need to reference them, but think about them on the subway on the way to the date. And think about things. I think that like, for instance, things that are just like funny stories from your past or whatever they might be, like go-tos that you know, not things like ask him how many children he has or ask him how many children he wants. Like I would say, don't think of like first date conversations. Think of more just like fun things that have been in the news that you would like to talk about with somebody and keep those in the top of your brain.
Topical humor.
Topical stuff, stories from your past. Like I wouldn't focus on the what are supposed to be the things that I'm learning on this first date. So I would do that. The second thing I would do is I would get there early and I would get the seat that like has my back to the wall because I feel like it would be really stressful to arrive and have him already there and like not be able to choose my seat. I feel like as much as she can, putting herself in the power position, because I feel like she'll feel more comfortable. And that means both like choosing her own seat, but also potentially like maybe going out to drinks with a girlfriend before she goes to dinner and like having one drink, not showing up wasted, but having one drink and having like a very calm, fun time with your girlfriend who can like, you know, talk you up a little bit and get you ready. I feel like the worst thing to do is to get fretting for 2 hours before the date, spend way too much time getting ready and go right there and like have this all built up. The more you can like diffuse that tension immediately before and kind of just like roll in without being able to like concern yourself, I think the better it will go.
Stephen, that's interesting because we had this advice earlier or question about this earlier in the Love Know-It-All season about the woman who met these guys at a coffee shop and she liked to get there early, like an hour early. And then she felt like that she was in the power position when the guy showed up.
Well, but I think this what Sophie's suggesting is different because it's not like get to the coffee shop, get the lay of the land, get your table. You know, it's this is more about getting yourself in like a good headspace. In some ways, it's kind of the opposite because in that coffee shop example, you know, so much of it was just like this laser focus on preparing yourself for the date. And I think Sophie's kind of suggesting the opposite, which is right. Like get yourself out of the headspace of like this date is the most important thing in my day. It's I'm going to hang out with this person. I'm going to have some fun. We're going to have some conversation, you know, and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, distract yourself from the pre-date. Like, don't allow theirself to be that pre-date time.
Mm-hmm. Sophie, would you do this for a friend? A friend says, hey, I have a date with a guy and I want to, like, go out. And then, you know, you're sort of like the corner person in, like, a boxing match, like, getting them loose before they go into the date.
Yes, 100%. Think about, like, how much better it is when, you know, those moments when you're with your friends and they're like, you are just the best. Like, anybody who thinks like, you are the best person in the whole world. Nobody deserves you, you know? And, like, you want... And then you're like, yes, that's right. Nobody does deserve me. I'm 40 pounds overweight and I'm like, you know, very, but like, you're right. Like nobody deserves me. And I think that like, that's a little bit of the attitude, like obviously not to the extreme that you want to go in with. And not like, I think the more you think about it, the more you stress about it.
What's the exit strategy for a date? Like, do you try to leave early? Does she get dessert? You know, what does she suggest as they're leaving? Like, hey, this was really fun. It would be great to see you again. Does she wait for him to suggest that?
I mean, I guess it depends on how the date goes. I think an exit strategy like is important. And I think it's a matter of like, let's not, maybe you don't order appetizers to get very tactical. Like maybe you jump right into the dinner. And then if you really like him, like you can have dessert afterwards and you can have a coffee afterwards. Like it's easier to extend on the back end than if you start with a salad, like you're already committing yourself to a salad and an entree. Like that's two courses already. So I would maybe skip right to the entree. I think the other thing I will say is that for my single, like
moment of time where I online dated, I think that another mindset that's important to have, which I certainly had because I went on terrible dates, is like to not have this mindset like I'm going to go to the bathroom and pretend that my grandmother's sick and leave. Like I went on some terrible dates where within the first 10 minutes, I was like, this person's terrible. I'm never going to want to see them again. They're not terrible, but like this is just not working. And I would say like change your mindset and use that time. And maybe this is just an introvert saying this, but to practice socializing. Like I would literally come back to the table and be like, okay, I'm not going to see this person again, but like, I'm going to have a nice night and I'm going to practice like telling some of my stories. I'm going to practice like having a connection with somebody. I think that that can still be a positive experience for you and like a good learning experience without like having, just because you're not interested in the person doesn't mean you can't try to make them like you. Like, I think that's a good test.
Yeah, but then you might be practicing and the guy's like, oh my God, Sophie, you're captivating. When can I see you again?
Yeah, that's fine. And then you ghost them. That's the great thing about
online.
And
you ghost them. Sophie, I really want to know from you. Okay. And then because we haven't talked about this. So the check comes now and we've ordered a salad and appetizers and what's the move there? Because I feel like that if I was in the position of being on these dates, I would feel like, well, I'll pay for it. But then do I offer for to split it? Am I being presumptive by paying the check here? So what's been your strategy with that?
Okay, I definitely want to hear Steven's strategy too. I'm curious to know what he does. And you too, Rob, but you know, you're married for a long time. I think that I have very set rules depending on what it is. So for instance, if I'm not interested in the person at all and they pay and I'm not interested in them because I think they're a douchebag, like I'm going to let them pay. Like I won't even offer. I have many times like, I'm like, okay, great. You're paying and I'm still going to ghost you. Mm-hmm. So I feel okay about that. I think that there is this weird thing that when you like the person, I sometimes go back and forth between, I think if I do let them pay, it's with a lot of, saying no first, mostly because I don't want to get into a relationship with somebody where the expectation is that they pay all the time. Mm-hmm. So I would say that almost like if I liked the person, I would try harder to split the bill. I don't know. What do you do, Steven?
I do have a little bit of those sort of old school values with respect to that. Like, I do think that the guy should pay for the first date and second date at least. You know, I think ultimately, if you do start dating someone seriously, you can finances come into it, right? You can start talking about it from that, you know, from then on. But I always insist on paying, you know, on the first date. I think it's totally fine if the lady will also offer to pay, but I don't want to get into a big fight about it. You know, it's not, you know, we're not buying a jet together where we're going out to dinner. So I, you know, I think it's not, you know, it's totally appropriate and nice to like be like, oh no, let's split it. And if he accepts, like, that's fine too. You know, maybe he doesn't, maybe his values are slightly different, but I think it's proper for the guy to pay. I know, am I going to get in trouble for saying that? And I think it's nice.
I would pay if and when I started dating Nicole, like I would pay for the dinner, but I would take it, you know, Sophie, you're saying that if I really liked the guy, I would split it. I think I would take it as if I was on a date with a woman and she's like, no, I insist we split this. I was like, oh yeah, she never wants to see me again. She's like, I don't want to give this guy the wrong idea. This is it. This is the end of our, you know, we've come this far. Let's go our separate ways. It's almost like a dinner divorce at that point. It's like, let's split the dinner up. You took this, I took this, and then let's go our separate ways and we never see each other again.
I agree. I read it as like a neg if it's like the person is clearly insisting that it's really important to her to split it. I mean, you know, not like a defining moment in the history of our relationship. I wouldn't, you know, if I had an amazing time and it was really important to my date to split it, I wouldn't, you know, then think, well, forget it. It's all over now.
Right. It'd be nice if she says, no, you sure? You sure? And like, no, I got this. But when she's like, no, seriously, I insist. I must implore you. I need to pay for my half of this. I need to walk away from this with a clean conscience.
I mean, I think that everybody has different values around this and nothing's wrong. I think that the place where you can really go poorly is in the amount of insisting that you do. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, yeah, I think whether or not who pays, you can offer, you know, whatever. But like, I think when it goes poorly is when it's like, oh no, please. If somebody's like saying that they want to pay, like, let them pay. But yeah,
All right. Let's talk about our next question. Rebecca is frustrated by a guy and she's about to snap. So she met somebody on Halloween. Let me read it in the first person. This is where I get hung up. I met someone out on Halloween who I surprisingly really liked. We danced and hung out for most of the night, and I went back to his place after. We didn't have sex, just made out, cuddled, and talked for a while. Then I gave him my number, and I hoped for the best. He texted me the next day to give me his number, so I felt confident that he was into me. I let myself get excited about it. I decided that instead of waiting and playing games, I would text him the following day to try to start a conversation and hopefully make plans to hang out again. He wasn't very responsive. Later on in the week, I tried sending him a text asking directly if he wanted to get a drink that weekend. Long story short, he basically blew me off and then ended up telling me he just broke up with his girlfriend a couple of weeks ago, and it seemed like I wanted something more serious than him, and he didn't want to lead me on. My response was basically, that's too bad, but I get it. Just don't lose my number. I figured I wouldn't hear from him again. Fast forward 2 months, and out of nowhere, he adds me on Snapchat. Pretty safe to say he wasn't drunk or anything since it happened around 9 a.m. Hey, don't assume anything.
Yeah.
I accepted his request and waited for him to make the next move. Problem is, it's been 3 weeks now, and while he looks at all my snaps, he's yet to send me any kind of message. Is he waiting to make a move? I told myself that no matter what, I wasn't going to send the first message and risk coming on too strong like I did last time, but I'm starting to get really impatient. What do you think? Is he really interested in me or is he toying with me? What's my best move, Rebecca? She's a 27-year-old in New York.
Oh.
I have no patience for this kind of shit.
Yes. Hey, be nice to Rebecca. She wrote us in a question, Sophie. You could at least answer it.
No, I'm going to answer it.
Oh, with the guy, Rebecca, you're losing patience.
No, with Rebecca.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that. But I think that when you are like literally keeping a calendar of every time somebody's communicated with you and trying to read into that, whether or not like this person likes you or is interested in you and how much, like, I think that that shows that like you're not necessarily, you don't like value yourself enough to be in a right headspace to enter a relationship into this person. Like, the guy followed her on Snapchat. Why didn't she just reach out to him and say, hey, like, long time no talk, let's get a drink? And then the answer question's answered. And like, maybe he doesn't want to get a drink. Maybe he does. Like, maybe he really did get out of a relationship. He's not ready for a relationship. If he's a guy who just got out of a relationship and is like too much of a pussy to like not talk to you and just follow you on Snapchat and watch all your snaps, like, I just don't think I don't think it's worth all of your energy trying to like analyze what that all means.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I have had these kind of conversations so many times with friends. And I feel like when they finally do enter into a good relationship, it never starts out like this. Both because the guy on the other end is not doing these things, but also like the girl is not reading in to every single move that's ever happened.
Right.
And so I feel like,
right,
to me, this sounds like not toxic, but it just sounds like this person is not in the headspace to enter into a relationship. And it's certainly not with this person. And to me, it's a matter of just like, just put yourself out there, say, let's get a drink. If you don't want to get a drink, like, move on.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever been in a situation where I was overanalyzing every signal. Oh my gosh, she hasn't texted for so many days. You know, what does that mean? And it's actually turned into anything positive.
Steven, I think with the missing information that we're lacking right now is, how many Snapchats does this guy watch? Is he watching, 500 Snapchats? Is he just watching her Snapchats?
Yeah.
That's what we need to know.
You know, I mean, and it scrolls automatically.
But is Rebecca posting 30 times a day? But I also get that Rebecca's probably listening to me like, this is like not helpful, guys. Like, this is, you know, my life. It's easier for you to say like, this is not how good relationships are supposed to start.
No.
And so I get that. I guess
that is helpful because we're saying, you know, that don't, you know, like, move on, right? Let this one go.
Yeah. I think you could also like always like, you know, throw out that last ditch life tube or whatever and see what happens. And just like she did before, right? She had that whole back and forth. He texted her, right. She texted him, he ghosted her. And then she said, let's get drinks. Like something very firm, like a slight ultimatum in a way of like, give me an answer. Like, I'm not going to do this. And he, you know, ghosted on her and said, sorry, I think you want something more. Like, to me, that was a very, very, in a way, that was very clear, and she did the right thing in that situation. And to me, it seems like in this situation, she should do the same thing. Just a very clear, hey, like, saw you follow me on Snapchat. Would love to catch up. Let's get a drink. And like, either he does want to or he doesn't, but there's no point in wasting all this time and energy thinking about, you know, which Snapchats does he watch and which does he not want to
watch. Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, if anything, it does sound like this guy is relatively decent. You know, just it was really straightforward that about not wanting the same thing that she did, which I think a lot of people don't do, right? You hear a lot about more insidious ghosting where the person doesn't give you any kind of response ever. So, you know, the fact that this guy is likely to at least, you know, give you some sort of response. I agree with Sophie.
Sophie bringing the not necessarily the advice you want to hear, but the advice that you need to hear. Sophie, should she come in with, instead of like, hey, do you want to get together? Should she message the guy? Oh, my God, you are obsessed with me. You watch every single video I do. What's
Take
your
the
deal?
Power position. That's it.
I like that. I like that.
Good. Good. That's good advice. But either way, you get closure. You know what this is. You can say, okay, at least that this guy, he didn't respond to this message. I know it's over, or at least the door is open a crack.
I think that's right. And I also think it's important for Rebecca to remember anybody who's in this situation, it can feel like everything in the world is happening is about you, and it's not necessarily. And so I think sometimes you get into this thing of like, he hasn't texted me in 2 days. He must not be interested. And sometimes people don't text in 2 days because like their phone is dead, or because they're actually super busy at work and like they're not dating you, and they might be interested in somebody else too. And that doesn't mean that like they're not interested in you and this might not work out. But like, I think you have to remember like what, this person is a human too, who's like every moment of their life doesn't revolve around you, and give that person a break.
Our next question is from Calvin. Calvin is getting confused. Hey, Rob, Steven, and Sophie. I'm a guy in college with a beautiful girlfriend whom I love very much. She supports my survivor addiction and is very good to me. Recently, I've been working closely with a guy in a club that I joined, and we've quickly become really good friends. However, as we spend more time together, I actually feel like I'm starting to become attracted to him. I've never considered myself into guys, but when I spend time with him, it just feels right. And after hearing you guys talking about micro-cheating, I think some of that may be occurring here. The other guy's sexuality is ambiguous. I'm pretty sure he likes me too, though. I'm just wondering if you think I just found a really good friend, or if there may be something more. And what do you think this means for my current relationship with my girlfriend? I know it's not fair to her for me to feel this way about the other guy, but I just don't know what to do. Steven, did you ever feel this way with JT? LMAO, Calvin. I did not feel that way with JT.
That's so great.
We're just great friends.
It's hard to answer this question, right? Like, I am not, I've never been in this situation before. And I wish we maybe had a guest on who had potentially been in this situation. And maybe one of you two can speak to that. But weirdly, it does remind me, I don't think I've ever told anybody this. But when I had my first like real make out when I was, I don't know, like seventh grade, I guess, seventh and eighth grade.
Whoa.
It was like on a camping trip with my, like all of my older sister's friends, and they had brought some of their younger siblings, and they thought we were just like kind of little brats who were going to do nothing. And they were like all there to kind of like hook up or whatever. And so the three of us like all stayed in a tent together, and I ended up like making out with like this friend of mine's cousin. And it was like one of the most serious makeout sessions, actually, I think in my entire life, mostly because neither of us had any idea what we were doing. Anyway, I don't want to get into all the details of this, but I remember after this happened, like this is the early days of the internet. I was not an internet person. I like somehow found, I'm trying to remember the name of the website, some kind of like teen message board website. Cause I was so worked up about this like experience. And I went onto some kind of teen message board website to like the relationship section. And I wrote this whole paragraph detailing like in detail, like everything that had happened and exactly like how the kiss had started, like what the kiss had been like, trying to give like all the details of, you know, what it was like and how the kisses had ended. And then I tried to ask the message board the question of, okay, based on my description of the kiss, does this person like me? Like I was like, I was like so stupid that I was thinking that if I could just describe the situation and the kiss well enough, they'd be able to tell me like both. I think I was asking both about like my feelings. Like, do I like this person? Like, does this mean I like this person? And does this mean this person liked me? And I guess it really reminds me of this question this guy is asking, because it feels like a question that you can't ask a message board, or you can't necessarily, you know, ask people, you know, the know-it-alls. It feels like a question that like you within yourself probably know the answer to better than anyone else. And you can never describe, you can't be like, well, he looks at me a lot when we're doing lab and he looks at me to the left and then he looks at me to the right. Does that mean that he likes me? Does that mean that I like him? Like it feels like the question that I hope this person is able to like figure out themselves.
At first glance, I thought he's asking, should I pursue this relationship with this other person that I work with? But upon hearing it again, when he brings up micro cheating, I think he's asking more along the lines of, is this cheating in some way for me to even be having these feelings, and not even that this person is going to act on those feelings?
I mean, I read it as like a question of like, am I gay or am I bisexual? Like, what does this mean? Like, to me, this is a bigger identity question. And maybe like I'm not progressive enough, and like but to me, this is a bigger identity question of like,
impossible,
I've dated
Sophie.
All these women. Like, I almost think like having the girlfriend right now is beside the point. Like, there's a question here of, am I interested in men as well as women? And like, that seems like a question that needs to be answered regardless of whether or not he's in a relationship right now or not. And this feels like micro cheating. It feels like it overshadows that.
You think it is micro cheating? Oh, no, you think it's more than micro cheating?
Just to go back to the question, he says, after hearing you guys talk about micro cheating, I think some of that might be occurring here. The other guy's sexuality is ambiguous. I'm pretty sure he likes me, though. I'm just wondering if you think I found a really good friend, or if there may be something more here. And what do you think this means for my current relationship with my girlfriend?
Right. To me, that sounds like he's, I mean, right, the very fact of the friendship or the attraction, that's not necessarily cheating, or, you know, as we discussed with Simone, I don't totally believe in the idea of micro cheating. There's nothing wrong with that, but it does, like, the very fact that he's asking this question, you know, to us in this context, does make it sound like he's interested in something more happening. And then regardless of the gender issues, from my perspective, you know, you've got to solve things with your girlfriend first. You know, you've got to address what it is, you know, that's going wrong in your relationship, that you're considering pursuing something else. And if it's that, you know, you're exploring this part of your sexuality that you weren't even aware of, you know, and as a result, you feel like this more traditional heterosexual relationship is holding you back from that, you know, it still feels like there is another person there, you know, that, you know, who you've got to be respectful to, first and foremost.
He says in the opening too, I'm a guy in college with a beautiful girlfriend whom I love very much. And I think while it's fine to say, you know, I have this attraction or this, I don't even think it matters so much if it's a guy or a girl.
Right.
There's somebody I work with and I'm sort of attracted to this person, but you have a girlfriend. Have a girlfriend. And if you love her, then you don't need to pursue every impulse that, you know, it's okay to have different attractions to people. But if you're happy, why are you going to mess this up?
Right.
Oh, see, I mean, I don't think we know enough about this person. And maybe this person is bisexual. But like, I saw this question a little bit as like, potentially this is somebody who for the first time in their life realized that they might be attracted to men as well as women. Mm-hmm. And to me, that seems like, just because that seems to me like such a important identity question, that it does make a difference that this is a man and not a woman. Because if it's a woman, it's more of a question about like your relationship with your current girlfriend, what's going wrong, like how can you fix it? Do you leave the relationship with this other person? Like if this is somebody who's suddenly realizing that they might be bisexual or might be attracted to men as well as women, or men and like men more than women, then that feels like so much less about this current girlfriend. Like it just, I don't know, it seems like bigger thing.
But yeah, I agree with you, but I still think, I mean, I'm sort of, I think maybe taking a middle position between the two of you guys, which is that, yes, it's very important if it is like this fundamental identity question, but he should still solve issues with his girlfriend first. And maybe that means breaking up with her so he can explore new sides of himself. I just think, you know, cheating on someone, you know, or don't let the micro cheating become actual cheating, you know, break up with her first before you do explore that side of yourself.
So he's got to break up with his girlfriend before he even finds out if this guy likes him back?
Well, I think as soon as you ask someone, hey, are you interested in me, or do you like me? Like, that's more than micro cheating, right? Like, that's cheating. Like, or that's setting the stage to cheat.
I don't know. I mean, I think you got to get that read first, right? I mean, it's just like no, I just, you know, you're a funny guy. I like hanging out with you.
I mean, I'm a novice to the concept of micro cheating, but like my understanding was that it was a way of almost pathologizing just the natural communication and, you know, emotion that we have for the people around us in our lives, you know, that might not be our major significant other. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, but I think as soon as it becomes like setting the stage to do actual, you know, some sort of physical or relational connection, then it's highly suspect.
Okay.
So do you agree? I don't know. What do you?
I mean, I think that micro cheating, just as a buzzword, I think is probably a little bit of a silly concept. I think it's just another word for lying. You know, lying is bad. You shouldn't be doing that in a relationship. So do you see a big difference between just lying to your partner and micro cheating?
So lying is micro cheating. I thought that just like having a close work connection with someone of the gender that you're attracted to,
but then being dishonest,
was micro cheating.
Like, sort of hiding it from your significant other. That's micro cheating sort of has become the label for that.
Yeah, dishonesty is bad.
Dishonesty is a general rule is bad, yeah. But you know, I don't think that it's necessarily that it's like, oh, I'm micro cheating. I need to, you know, own up to this, or I need to break off the relationship. I think if you have a good thing, don't rock the boat.
But you think it would be okay for him to find out if the guy likes him before he breaks up with his lady?
Well, I think if the guy feels like, okay, it's worth it for me to, like, I think I'm more attracted to this other person. From reading the email, I feel like that this guy is saying, Calvin is saying, you know, oh, I get butterflies when this other guy is around. And, right. You know, Emma, what does this mean? Am I gay? Am I bisexual? What does it mean? But if he still is, you know, predominant emotion he has is love with his girlfriend, that I don't think that he should break up with her to pursue, like, is this possible? Could I be, maybe, and who knows, maybe he'll meet a guy that he really falls head over heels with at some other point. It's like, oh my God, this changes everything. I need to, you know, reconsider everything. But if the starting point was I'm in love with my girlfriend, then I don't think that he should throw that away for a fling with somebody else that he just met.
And she supports his survivor addiction.
Yes, which is important. This other guy might hate Survivor.
Yeah, that's right.
So guys, we are spending a lot of time in a question that might just have been trolling us based on the last sentence.
Yes, well, that is possible.
Yeah.
All right.
So let's talk about Teresa. Calvin.
Let's talk about Teresa. She's in a relationship as well, but she also has met somebody else. That Teresa says, I am a 23-year-old female who has a wonderful and amazing boyfriend. She's calling him M.
Oh.
And we've been together for 6 months. He's sweet. We care about each other and we're very happy together for the present. However, I have gained a crush on D, who's a cool person and a friend. This would not be a problem normally. Normally, I would just acknowledge the attraction and limit the amount of time that I spend with them to not create problems, waiting until the crush eventually dissipated. The problem is that D is my roommate.
Teresa wants the D.
And in their own way, D has confirmed that they too have a crush on me. It is difficult to let a crush disappear if I am seeing the person daily and we are friends and we spend a lot of time in the same social circles. To further my dilemma, I own the place and I can't just make up an excuse about having to move out, and I can't just kick out my roommate because that would be cruel. No matter what, I want to keep my friendship with D and my relationship with M, but I don't know what to do. This is a job for the Love Know-It-Alls. Also, one other complication is that M and my relationship is not a permanent thing. We're just enjoying what we have right now, as we have a lot in common, but we have different life goals. I want kids in the future. I know he does not. And I do think that D knows this about me. I had also wrote back to Teresa to find out, you know, because it was not mentioned whether her roommate was a man or a woman. She wrote back to me and says that her roommate is a male, but she is an openly bi woman.
Got it.
Very complicated with male-female roommate, Sophie.
It's very complicated. I guess I'm a little confused about why she just wouldn't try things with D. Like, she's in this relationship that she knows is not going to end. Like, I can understand being married and making a choice to be with somebody and having crushes and being attracted to people and making that constant choice every day to, like, stay with your loved one and not, you know, cheat or do anything that would make him upset. But, like, sounds like Teresa is young and with somebody that she doesn't want to be with the long term. So I guess I'm a little confused about why she feels so much loyalty to this first person that she wouldn't necessarily be interested in trying things with this roommate who seems to be interesting.
Right. Steven, I mean, she already knows so much about D that he's been living with her for all this time. It's like, you know, you go on these dates with people, you're waiting for the other shoe to drop. She knows where the other shoes are.
Yeah. Yeah. You know that his bathroom habits are okay. You know, you can obviously live with his bathroom habits because you are. I agree. I think that, you know, it makes a lot of sense for Teresa to just move forward with things with D.
Think about the convenience.
So convenient.
The D is there all the time.
D is there. It's right there.
Also, I just feel like a lot of people have this problem of forgetting about the concept of sunk costs and feeling like, you know, just because they're in a relationship. I mean, I get it, like when you're married and you're making a choice to be with somebody and all that stuff. But like, I feel like I have a lot of friends who stay in relationships way too long and always talk about like working on them. And especially when they feel like, oh, but I'm probably not going to end up with this person long term. Like, I think that people don't cut people quick enough.
Yeah, I agree. I think I've said this in almost every podcast, but like my biggest life lesson was learning to just like end things with people who I didn't think I would be with long term. Sounds like Teresa is definitely not going to be with Mr. M long term. So why not explore things with the D?
Okay.
Although let's say that the situation with D, and she should explore things with D, but let's say the situation with D is like, because we can't ask her. Let's say that he is like the Tongan flag bearer, right? He's like super sexy. Right. He's always oiled up. He never has a shirt on. But he's also not somebody she wants to be with long term. So maybe she's just not, she doesn't want to date him, but like it's kind of hard to have a dating life when you have like the Tongan in your house at all times, right?
The bigger problem here that is, if it does not go well with D, they're not compatible for some reason. It's like, okay, well, now I need a new roommate. Now, how do I get rid of this guy?
No, but that's an easy excuse, right? Because, you know, here she doesn't feel like it's fair to, you know, send D to the curb, literally, you know, just because she's got a crush on him. But if they have some messy breakup, it really simplifies things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what if it just goes very poorly quickly, where it's like, for whatever reason, they're just not compatible. And now it's like, oh, we tried this. Oh, boy, it didn't work. Can we go back to just being roommates?
No, then you say to M, like, listen, I'm willing to get back together with you if you can also move in. I got this lease.
Yes. Does she have to worry about at all that if D will say anything like, oh, you know, my landlord seduced me and then she kicked me out to the curb? Could this be a potential legal problem, Sophie?
I am not a lawyer, but I feel like you're in the clear about that one. I feel like usually as a woman, you're not going to get in trouble for that shit.
Okay. Right. For now. Okay. All right. Steven, what about this question from a listener, Eliza?
Should we use a different name? I don't know. All right. Eliza wants to DTR. Love the podcast. The Love Know It Alls podcast has been a blast to listen to so far and an amazing idea from Steven. Oh, thank you, Eliza. Longtime listener, but first time sending in an email question. I have been seeing a guy that I met on Bumble for over 2 months now. We see each other several times per week, talk and text daily, and our relationship has progressed pretty quickly. However, I'm having some trouble trying to figure out what he really wants out of this. We've not had the DTR talk yet and have not really even talked about past relationships or what we are looking for out of this. I am in my mid-20s, don't have a lot of experience in dating because I had been focused on school and my demanding job. In the past, I have been friend-zoned with guys or just haven't been able to get through to the point where it becomes serious. I definitely do not feel in the friend zone with him, but I can't seem to figure out if he wants something exclusive. I have subtly brought this up and have not gotten a straight answer, yet he keeps asking me on dates and we have a lot of fun together. I'm afraid to be too pushy, but also afraid that if I do nothing, that I may just be in for another heartbreak. Would love some insight and thoughts.
I was going to ask the same question.
Thanks, Eliza. Can someone tell me what DTR is?
You guys, Google this. DTR is define the relationship.
Oh, did you know that before Googling it?
I know this because I looked it up, Stephen.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, it's down to something.
Yeah. She wants to define the relationship.
Aha.
Sophie, now, is this another case where, much like one of our earlier emailers, where you say, yes, absolutely, don't tiptoe and dance around this. You want to define the relationship. Just come out and ask for the definition.
I think I do lean towards that. And I guess two things. One is I think that you should really have the conversation with yourself about what the possible situations are what the possible answers he might have. And what does that mean for you? So like, if he doesn't want to define the relationship right now, does that mean you want to break up with him? Does that mean that it's like too difficult to date somebody who feels good as dating other people? So I think step one is to really know where you stand on this and what you're going to be okay with on his side. And then I do think that one thing I've like slowly come to realize over the course of my 20s is that, I mean, this is like this obvious, whatever. I don't know. I feel like I'm like one of those losers standing in front of college students right now talking about relationships, but like communication matters.
That is what you are, by the way, just not standing.
And I think one thing I realized is that everybody has different baselines for what communication is. And I think, I feel like whenever everybody I've dated has been different in this. And I, my current boyfriend actually is an over communicator. And I remember like very quickly into the relationship, he was like talking in kind of very specific terms about defining relationships, not necessarily pushing for one thing or another, but just communicated about things that I actually had previous thought when communicating relationships. It was just kind of like unsaid things. And so I think what's cool about, you know, this girl's situation is that she can decide that she's going to be that communicator in this relationship. And she can talk about whatever she wants to talk about. And she can ask this person to talk about whatever they want to talk about. And as long as she knows where she stands and what's acceptable to her, then like there's going to be, you know, no wrong answer. I think it's crazy to be like wanting to communicate about something and tiptoeing around it because you're worried about what the other person's going to say. Like, I think as long as you have had that conversation in your head, like ask the question.
I agree with you up to a point. I think there's probably a period of time where you shouldn't define the relationship, right? Like to the first couple of weeks. But, you know, you guys have been regularly hanging out for 2 months. It definitely feels appropriate to DTR.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stephen, I disagree with you. Okay, let's say that you are in your late 20s. You've been dating people for a long time and you are like looking for a serious relationship. And it's just... you can decide, like, if you've decided, like, it's a deal breaker for me. Like, I've done too many of these things where people are dating 10 people and it lasts 3 months and it ends. And like, I right now only want to be investing my time with people who want to be exclusive and want to really see what this is going to be like. Then I think it's like totally fine to say that and to say, like, look at The Bachelor. They say that on the first date, right? Like, I think, why not say that like up, you know, up front? And if this is something not, and granted, I hear you that like, I don't know, maybe this is somebody who you think could work out with you and like might be scared off by that. But I just think that at some point, like you have to like say what you're willing to accept. And there's enough fish out in the sea or fish backs or whatever that like I'm sure you're going to find.
How rude.
I just don't think you need to be worried about what other people want from you. I think that like it sounds scary to define and to insist on what you need. But like, I think that it's usually comes, usually there's like a better outcome than you expect.
Okay.
I think that's an idealistic perspective. And wouldn't that be wonderful if, you know, on date two or date three, you could say, hey, what are you thinking? And the guy or the girl, if, you know, even if he or she is not ready to commit, would say in that situation, you know, I'm not ready to commit right now. I'm really enjoying our time together. Let's see where things go from here and maybe have another conversation in a couple of weeks or a couple of months. But that's honestly, that's just not how people are, I think. You know, and I think it's like almost a cliche where someone in a relationship will say something, you know, like, hey, how serious are we? Really soon. And it will freak out the other person because they'll think that they're getting pressured into something before they even really know the person. So, you know, I mean, I agree, like in my perfect world, we would all be constantly communicating about what we want from the get-go. But I don't think that's really how people operate in a dating situation.
Okay, so philosophically, we are all in agreement, you know, people should define the relationship. But I think that the real practical question is what's the tactic here, Stephen? So
We need you to be the arbiter which side do you come down?
So I guess let's give Eliza some practical advice. So what do you feel like she should say, Sophie, specifically if she wants to get this answer?
I think she should say, hey, I really loved the last couple months.
Last couple months.
Yeah.
Well, that's a question. Are they using the L word? I guess the L word comes after UDTR.
I doubt that. Yeah. I think after UDTR. Yeah. I think she says, like, I've really loved the last couple of months. And this depends on like what she wants from him. But if I were her, I might say something like, I've loved the last couple months. I've realized after, you know, having dated you for a little while now, like, I'm actually not interested in dating other people. And I'm only interested in dating you. And I don't know where you stand on that. And I think it's okay for people not to be on the same page for a little while. It depends on what she wants. Like, I know I've been comfortable in situations before feeling like, okay, and telling a person like, hey, I'm going to be exclusive with you. And like, I'm not asking you to be exclusive with me. But I feel like a good place to start is at least if you feel like this is a burning thing inside you, at least telling the person that this is where you're at and you're like, they're somebody you're exclusive with, whether or not they're exclusive with you.
Steven, should she come out and say, hey, look, I have something I want to run past you. I think we should stop seeing other people and then see his reaction to that. If he's gets like, hey, what do you mean by that? Or what do you mean you were seeing other people?
No, I think you got to weigh in here, Rob. You know, Sophie and I have been really hashing this out, but you have yet to provide your perspective.
I don't, you know, I kind of feel like that if there is resistance with anything, I feel like that there is a problem. I feel like that it's almost like a little Pollyanna to think that it sounds like he's not on the same page here for whatever reason.
Wait, why?
Why? Yeah.
Because I feel like that any sort of like, okay, I thought it was this, and you know, and then the other person, like, I feel like when things are going well and going great, I almost feel like that there is none of this stuff. And I feel like that, yes, you can talk through a certain thing, but as both of you have said, that when there's too much of like trying to fix things that aren't necessarily working. And I feel like that in the first couple of months of a relationship, I feel like that everything should be going fantastic. And maybe that's just, you know, me talking about my storybook romance with the first lady of podcasting. But I feel like that if for whatever reason, I feel like that something is not clicking here.
You know what? I really don't agree with you. I thought, you know, just because they haven't had the DTR conversation doesn't mean it's going to go badly. Someone's got to start it. You know, she's felt hesitant to start it. He might feel just as hesitant. Mm-hmm. And maybe he doesn't even realize he wants to DTR. You know, maybe he doesn't realize that he wants to have a monogamous relationship. But maybe, you know, the very fact of her bringing it up and saying to him at this point, hey, this is really important to me. I need this in order to keep going forward. Pressure sounds like a bad word, but will inspire him to make that commitment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also think, guys, we should come up with a cutoff. There has to be a cutoff where, like, you're allowed to have this conversation. Like, she shouldn't be nervous after two months.
Yeah.
You know, like, 2 months, like, have the conversation. And she probably, like, if he's like, I actually don't want to be, you know, exclusive with you, like, that's probably a time to break up with him. Okay. Like, if this is the
cutoff that you can't have it until you get to 2 months, or the cutoff is that after 2 months you have to have it?
I think the cutoff is after 2 months or after a month and a half, whatever it is, like, nobody can fault you for having it. Nobody can be like, oh my God, you're going so quickly, I can't believe you'd bring this up. Like, I thought we were just having fun. Like, no, that's like
what
not a reasonable answer to
you
this.
You are crazy. Why are you asking me all these questions?
Oh my God, you're such like a stage one clinger. You know, like, you can't say that after 2 months somebody brings this up.
Again, she says that she has subtly brought this up and she hasn't gotten a straight answer, but he keeps asking her out on dates. So, yeah, I think that, you know, have no hesitation with asking this. But if he's being evasive, that I do feel like that it is not trending in the right direction.
I was just going to say, from the other point of view, I want to say to somebody, like, maybe, like, don't give somebody such a hard. It might be an issue of like a theory of commitment. Like, when I was first dating my current boyfriend, like, I insisted that we were in an open relationship for like literally 9 months, and we were not in an open relationship. Like, I was very much in a closed relationship, but I had this obsession with calling it an open relationship. And so I guess I think it's good to remember like that kind of like somebody's response to putting words on something might not actually be reflective of the way they feel about the relationship, right? Or there might be something else going on behind it.
And I want to sort of walk back my idea that it's, you know, there's a point at which it's too early to have the conversation, because, you know, I also would hate for anything I say to encourage someone to stay in one of those relationships where, you know, the guy is dating or the girl is dating 10 other people and you had no idea. You know, I do think there's a point at which it's too early to like demand, you know, what are we? But it's probably never too early to get a sense from someone of what they're looking for.
Is what are we? Is that the best way to open that conversation, Steven?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how do you start it?
I feel like those conversations should come from like what you're going to do. Like, hey, by the way, like, I really like you. I'm not interested in dating other people right now. Like, rather than say like, we have to be on the same page about this, or like, what are we? What do you think? What are you doing? Like, I think that the positive way to start it is to say like, I really like you. I'm not, you know, I don't want to date other people right now.
And what, like, if he's like, oh, great, thanks.
Well, that's when you like, you know, you have to have your decision about like what that means to you.
All right, here's a question from Kristen, and I think that this is keeping with this theme that we're talking about. Hey, guys, love the show, and I want you guys to keep doing the love KIA, Steven. My question is about a new relationship. I've recently started dating this guy. Let's call him Mike. He's 32. I'm 30. We've gone out 3 times now, and I really like him. He's fun. He's cute. He's smart. And basically, just about everything I'm looking for in a guy. The only problem is he just got out of a long-term relationship only 3 months ago and isn't looking to get into something serious right away. He says he was thinking more about enjoying each other's company for the time being and seeing where things go from there. I'm looking for someone who is hopefully going to be able to spend the rest of my life with me because I'm settled into my career and I'm ready for the next step. That said, I don't necessarily need to rush into the commitment, but I don't want to waste my time either. I don't want to freak him out by asking about this too soon, but I'm trying to figure out how long to wait until I bring up exclusivity. If it matters, sex is off the table, my choice, until we aren't seeing other people. Do you have any tips on navigating this situation? How long should I wait to bring it up again? Thank you, guys. All right. So this is a question which, you know, similar to the last one, but we have a little bit more of a definition of what is going on with the guy that he is a little person, or he has defined the relationship, but it's just not the answer that she was looking for, Sophie.
Yeah. I mean, I would almost put this in the category of the thing I just talked about. I think some people, this to me sounds a bit like, there's one option, this man's not that interested. He wants to have a lot of fun right now. He's just not wanting to be in a relationship. I think the other option is that I think sometimes when you come out of a relationship, there are these set rules that you think that you have to follow in your brain where you're like, I just got out of a relationship. I'm not going to get into another one. Everybody says I can't get into another one. I have to be single. I want to like, and so like, I think that there is a possibility here that she needs to leave open, which is that this might be some kind of like external code or set of rules that he's like forcing himself to follow that might not actually be the way he feels. And so I would give this person like a little bit of a break. Like they did just get out of a long-term relationship. They might have this set of rules that they're following. It doesn't necessarily mean that things are not going to work out between you two. And I think that that question of like, when do I force exclusivity again? When do I force the conversation? I think is a bit of like, until it drives you mad. Like if you really like this person and you really think that this could be something that works out for you in a serious way, like I think you have to give this person, the guy, a break that he's going through this hard thing and try to like give him space and try to give him that time. And at some point that's going to come to a head and you're going to feel like it's just not worth it anymore. And that if he can't be ready to commit, like you're not ready anymore. But I guess what I would say is like, I would personally try to push that off as long as possible, as long as I felt like I could. Because I think this guy is like obviously going through shit. And I think that just because he broke up with somebody doesn't mean it can't work out with you. And he might truly just need some time. And if you can be that person who's like there and like not necessarily like waiting around for him, but giving him the time, it could work out.
And you know, the fact that they had this conversation so early and he gave the response that you would really hope for someone to give other than, you know, this is, it would be so impossible after two dates to say, this is perfect in every way. I'm ready for this. Right. I mean, it's, or maybe it's not impossible, but it seems like a lot. But for him,
improbable,
right? For him to say, I was more thinking of enjoying each other's company for the time being and seeing where things go from there. That's to me sounds like a pretty positive response. It's not just, there was nothing along the lines of, I'm just looking to have fun right now, or, you know, I don't want anything serious. Just not serious right now. And, you know, very open to the possibility in the future. I like our 6-week cutoff, Rob.
Yeah, that's good. No, I definitely, hear where, you know, this guy is coming from, because I have always said that if, for whatever reason, if I was ever on the dating scene again, I'm never getting married again. Not doing it. I'm never going to that. And I know that like I'd probably go on one date with somebody and end up married again. And so as long as it's not the situation where like if this guy is really like seeing 10 people and she's just one of them, like I can understand why she wants to pull the ripcord. But if it's more like a Sophie situation where it's like, hey, what do you mean? We're not in the seeing whoever we want. But he's not really. He's just saying that like he says, like, oh, I want to keep my options open, but he's really only with her, then I think that that's fine. I think that if it becomes an issue where that he is seeing multiple people and she's not comfortable with that, then I think she should move on.
And he's not doing it for the sex.
Yes. Yeah. Sophie, is that a good move from a negotiation standpoint that she says sex is off the table until we DTR?
I have to say my mindset shifted a lot in that question when that she said that. One, it made me feel like and more the reason to invest in this person. Like he obviously, like it's another piece of evidence that he's potentially very interested in her. I guess I would worry that like in this very specific situation, she might be like cutting herself and like everybody has their own thing, right? Like everybody has their own decisions about like when they want to have sex, when they don't want to have sex, and with whom, and with what kind of relationship. I guess I would just be worried that there would be a potential here, given that he's just come out of the relationship, and that given that he wants to like not dive right in, that she might be some like closing a door to a relationship that could possibly work. But you know what? If she's closing a door because like this is the way she closes doors, and like she's never going to change closing doors this way, like that's just going to happen. If that's a non-negotiable. But I think that that does might have a serious impact on whether or not this relationship works out.
Steven, would putting sex on the table accelerate things potentially?
And potentially, I guess, potentially anything could happen. We live in a very confusing world. Who knows? But I would say that doesn't seem like the smartest, right?
This is a negotiation.
No. Strike that. Strike my smartest. I would say that doesn't seem like it would necessarily incline someone to be in a relationship faster.
I also think if we just said that this is somebody who might need more time before jumping into a relationship, and it might be somebody that you can spend a lot of time with and get to know, but you're not in a specific, like in a defined relationship, then by like cutting off sex as an option, like you might be like, he might then find it harder. The two of you might find it harder to like sustain this like non-relationship hanging out period. Right.
Mm-hmm.
If you're right. not like going to have like a non-defined relationship where you're like having sex and hanging out, but you're also not going to be in a relationship, like what are you in? Especially if that period might go on longer than that usually would in a relationship because he's just gotten out of one.
I mean, maybe they're cuddling. We just know they're not having sex, right? They might be being physically intimate in some way.
Yeah.
Who knows? But I think he could say like, what do I want to be in a relationship with this person that we don't even do anything? Forget this. Let me go and find somebody else. But then maybe if she's like, okay, well, like here's like a sample of what this would be like. He's like, okay, I got to be with this person forever.
Or, you know, this is focusing his mind on analyzing her personality and trying to gauge whether they're compatible for a serious relationship.
Okay. And I think what I would say is that this seems like the wrong move on her part if she's doing this to try to force him into a decision. If she's doing this because she doesn't want to have sex with people before they are exclusive and like want to be together, you know, in the long term, then fine. But if she is like unusually holding back sex from this person because she thinks that it's going to like force him into being with her, then that feels like not the right way to go.
Okay.
So if it's about her, then it's a good thing. But if it's like a negotiating tactic for leverage, then it's a bad thing.
It's a red line. Yeah. Okay. Steven. And then we have one more question from Daniel.
All right. Daniel wants to know, I'm a male in my mid-20s and also a teenage cancer survivor. As you might imagine, the experience of undergoing 3 years of treatment for leukemia profoundly impacted my life. It's really influenced how I see the world, what I think the purpose of life is, what I want out of my career, really just about everything. I have long felt that a person, whether that be a platonic friend or potential romantic interest, could never really understand me as a person until they understood this part of my history and how it has shaped me. Obviously, however, this introduces the question of when is the best time to bring up this part of my life with a potential romantic interest. Normally, my MO has been to not mention it on the first few dates. It seems too heavy a topic of conversation. To be clear, I don't mind talking about it in the slightest, but I find that talking about it often makes people I already know uncomfortable, let alone a potential romantic interest who is just forming an impression of me. I also wonder if bringing it up would make a romantic interest wonder whether I am 100% physically up to snuff, whether there were any lasting side effects, etc. For the record, there were not. That said, sometimes I wonder if there's a catch-22 by not being open early, whether I come across as less genuine on a date than I otherwise would because there's a sense I'm holding something back. Generally speaking, I am pretty relaxed on dates and enjoy good conversation, so there's no confidence problem. But maybe by holding back, I give off a fake vibe. To make things more complicated, there's a very noticeable scar on my upper left pectoral due to my treatment. Whenever I get intimate with a woman, she is very likely to see it. And on some occasions, women have. They inevitably ask what it's from. And of course, I don't want to lie, but talk about a buzzkill bringing up cancer in the bedroom. Not ideal at all. What do you think about this? I'm all ears. Sincerely, Daniel.
And now, Steven, that you can speak from experience with this, right?
So I had cancer when I was 22, but it really was not, you know, it didn't seem like it had impacted my life in as significant a way as it did Daniel's, where he had 3 years of significant treatment that really shaped his worldview. You know, I found out that I had cancer in something like May or June, and then I had it, you know, surgically removed a couple months later. And I've, you know, other than getting regular tests, didn't have it influence my life much beyond that. So other than constantly getting to talk about what a hero I am for being a cancer survivor,
right.
I really, it hasn't like profoundly shaped me in any way. Although I do think I am superior to people who have not touched death as I have, but, but it is a heavy subject to bring up, you know, and I hold it back. I mean, obviously, even in spite of my glibness, it was a significant moment in my life. And, you know, I do agree with Daniel that if you bring up something like that, even if it has no lasting impact too early, the person really could get that sort of subconscious sense that maybe you're not 100% in some way. So, but I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think?
I think that it's possible that this is something that is a bigger issue in Daniel's mind than it might be in any of the partners that he's seeing. And while it might be an awkward topic of conversation to bring up on a first date, I mean, as you framed it, Stephen, you know, that this is a heroic thing to have beaten cancer and to have had this illness that he was able to overcome. And, you know, I think that it's a positive, and especially considering the fact that this was something that happened to him as a teenager and there's been no ill effects since that point. Like, I don't see the harm in, you know, bringing it up in a positive way, you know, pretty early on, maybe not, you know, as a, you know, before the appetizer comes, but I think that it's definitely something to bring on early in a new relationship, Sophie.
I agree that there shouldn't be a reason that he's worried about talking about it. I think this is like I think he should never bring this up on a first date. And I think I put this in a category with like a lot of other things, which for me includes Survivor, which is I think on a first date or even a second date or a third date, I think you're trying to like form a relationship that is within the confines of like your two seats that like doesn't have to do with your world or your past. And maybe this is super idealistic. But I know that for me, like if I'm on a first date and somebody, like I went on a date once with a guy who told me on the date about some like book that he had published. He'd been on like some kind of like, it was like a 30 under 30 list for people in England or something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was like a big deal. And I remember thinking that like that weirdly didn't, it was interesting, but I felt like it made me feel more disconnected from him because it made him more of like an individual person with all of his past became like more clear and he felt further from me. And I feel like that's a reason that I often don't bring up Survivor on a date is it feels like I become less of a potential partner in a relationship and more as like an object with baggage, whether it's good or bad baggage. I don't know. I just feel like first dates should be so much about your connection and about things that don't have to do with like the past. Things have to do with just like your thoughts and the way that you see the world. And I wouldn't bring up stuff. I think that would... It's not a negative thing. I just don't think it's a topic that you bond with somebody over. It's about you.
I try to bring up Survivor or tried to bring up Survivor as early as possible.
Being a cancer survivor or the show?
Yeah. TV survivor. Well, you know, my thing is like getting the...
You should do a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode about this.
Is that the point of the first date is to get the second date, you know, and like you got to divorce, you know, it from almost anything else. And so if you can say something that's going to help you get the second date. Now, I agree that the, you know, bringing up a serious illness might like out of the gate might give someone some sort of more negative impression, even if it's not a negative thing. I think I agree with you, Rob, as you're saying that it's a positive thing overall. I like second or third date. Bring it up in the second or third date.
Yeah. Now, Sophie, you bring up a good point of the introducing anything into the conversation that could potentially label you as less of an individual and more of, oh, the cancer survivor, the reality show contestant. Even we had questions from people that have talked about how, hey, I am a bisexual person and I don't know how to introduce this to somebody, or I am a gay person who I used to be married, or things like that, that if you bring that stuff up too early, you risk that the other person that you are seeing on a first impression only sees you as that.
I think that's totally right. I think first dates should be about like making fun of the other people in the restaurant and talking about like whatever art you saw recently or whatever it is. Like, I just don't think the more you talk about shit, like, you know, the big cancer you had in the past or the fact that your parent died or the fact that you were on Survivor, anything like that, it just like makes it into this weird one-sided conversation.
Especially because it's such an, you know, powerful part of Daniel's
huge.
Life,
how
where
you
he's saying it defined what he how he conceives of life and his and what he wants out of life. You know, that that's so heavy and so big that it does seem kind of outside the scope of a first date.
Let me add to this also that we have another question, and we've gotten a few questions like this over the run of doing this show. But somebody who has a chronic illness that they're dealing with, something that is going to be part of their life that there may not be an immediate cure to. When do you bring up something like that? Because I think that that is something people who are suffering with those types of things really also are struggling with in terms of going on dates, Sophie.
I think it falls totally into the same category, right? Like, I don't think it's deceptive to not tell somebody that you have multiple sclerosis on the first date. I don't think it's necessary. And I think it just makes the other person feel like they're disconnected from you. They're not meeting you. They're meeting this person who has all this shit going on in their lives. I think it's weird to not bring it. Like, I think the 2 month mark is a great mark again. Like, I think it's weird to not, or the 6 week mark. It's weird to not have brought it up by the 6 week, but it's not somebody else needs to know about your personal health.
Yeah, because you're right. Then they start like conceiving of all of the difficulties of being with you rather than their wonderful connection that the two of you have.
Yeah.
And so then is it, at a point where you have to like sit that person down and say, I have something that I have to tell you, that this is something that I'm struggling with also at the same time. And I hope that, you know, it's not a deal breaker for you. Or is it like more of an, oh, by the way, just so you know, this is something I have.
Well, I mean, it's different, right? If it's an ongoing illness versus if it's something that happened in the past. I mean, I think the cancer in the past is something, especially given the big scar, you know, date 3 or date 4 seems legit. But if it is sort of an ongoing issue, then it does seem like it warrants a real conversation devoted to just that subject.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's not any different from like, you're going to have a real conversation when you tell them like, hey, like me and my sister really hate each other. And like, this is like anything that's going to be a part of this person's life. And I think that the health stuff is no different. It doesn't have to be treated as like some kind of like special diamond. And that these are conversations that you'll like gradually have. And I think that the health is no different from kind of other aspects of your life that they might not know about that are going to affect them going on.
Oh, I was going to say, Sophie, in your career as a doctor, did you see a lot of people who were confronting the shame surrounding their illnesses?
Oh my God, I saw the craziest thing once. I'm sure I did. I can't think of anything there, but I once saw somebody at a high risk pregnancy clinic, and it had been a really tough ethical situation because I'm trying to remember exactly what happened, but she and her husband had gotten pregnant and like some of the genetic tests had come back bad. And so she was the one who was coming to all the appointments. And it turned out, end of the story, was that she and her husband were actually cousins and they had both been adopted.
What?
Yeah. And they'd both been adopted.
Oh my God.
So this child was like an incest baby. And wow. The big like ethical thing that had happened was that she had said to the doctors in the clinic, like, I do not want you to tell my husband that we are cousins. Like, this is information that I know. Like, I'm going to get my tubes tied. Like, I'm not going to have any more babies, like no more incest babies. But like, this is a thing that I don't want to tell my husband. I don't know why this is relevant, but it's just a crazy story.
What happened?
Well, yeah. At what point in the dating process do you tell someone that you are incest having
your cousin?
But did she know the whole time?
No, she didn't know until they got like the DNA things back. And then she kind of, I think, somehow pieced it together.
Was the baby okay or you never found out?
No, I just saw it in a clinic.
Oh, wow.
But I think, you know, this is shit happens. So like having cancer is not that bad if you think about it.
Yeah. Sophie,
maybe edit that out.
When you would start a new relationship, would you tell people that you were on Survivor?
I don't think I would ever tell them.
You would never tell them, they would just discover it and say like, hey, were you on Survivor at some point?
I actually had somebody discover it once who I'd been dating for a while because we went out to dinner and the people next to me recognized me.
Oh, that's the best possible way for it to be discovered.
You should hold out for that.
What must it be like then when they say to you, oh, you were on Survivor? And they say, well, how did you do? And you say, well, I won. Well, what's that like feeling like?
It's the worst. God. I feel like one of those people
worst.
Who are
it's like
people go to Harvard, right? And they're like, what do you say? Do you say, oh, I went to school in Boston? Or like, you know, like, do you just say you went to Harvard? I feel like I have the same situation with Survivor where when I end up having to tell somebody, I never do it well. And I sound like one of those assholes from Harvard because I'm always like, oh, I was on a reality TV show. And they say, which one? I say Survivor. And they're like, oh, how'd you do? And then I say, won. And I hate that. But I also feel like it doesn't never ever feel right to be like, oh, by the way, I was on a reality TV show that I won.
Mm.
Well, you don't wear the Harvard or Yale sweatshirt, you know, you just wait for someone to Google you.
Yeah, that's true. I tend to not try to tell people.
Yeah. No, well, Steven says you have to put Survivor pictures in your dating profiles.
Oh my God. Well, I think Survivor is, again, like, I don't have, like, you know, me in the hospital, you know, getting my cancer surgery in my dating profile. But I do think Survivor is every, you know, there's so many people who your potential mates are exposed to. And especially if you're in New York, there's a lot of, you know, pasty, skinny, bearded guys with glasses. Like, how do you distinguish yourself, you know, amongst that mass?
So you get a leg up from that.
That's all I got.
I have a fear that people would only go on a date with me because they thought that was like a fun story to tell. And that would really scare me.
I went on a date with a Survivor girl. But who cares why they go on the first date? You know, it doesn't matter why someone goes on a first date. All that matters is whether they get, you know, whether you have a second date.
Is that a male-female thing where Sophie doesn't want to, like, you know, waste her time with a guy that wants to just go on a date with her because she was on Survivor? But whereas, you know, Steven says, like, hey, if somebody wants to go on a date with me just because I was on Survivor, who cares? At least I was on a date.
Yeah. Well, you know, who cares, like, what gets you the date?
Yeah.
Well, like, for instance, I would guess that probably more men who have gone on Survivor date fans than women who go on Survivor date fans. And I think that's all coming down to the same thing of, like, I think I don't, and maybe this is a more common, like, maybe men are just like, oh, how are we going to get with me? Great. Like, I was on Survivor. Like, here, it's like having a Porsche and showing it off. Whereas, like, for me, I would be really uncomfortable feeling like I was an object in some way. And I think that would make me feel like an object, because I would feel like I would be being seen as like a Survivor girl and not as something else.
Like, every, like, you know, like, we're all fulfilling some whatever weird interest or group or fetish or, you know, childhood trauma, you know, that our person was with, right? Like, everyone is, like, you know, chosen for who knows what, like, mesh of reasons.
Yeah, but usually you don't know what it is.
So are you saying that no women ever went on Survivor so that they would meet hot guys after?
I'm sure there. I mean, it's not me. I think maybe I think there's a difference between like fans and hot guys, right? Who are like, oh, I know.
I heard there's a lot of hot guys that are fans.
No. There are hot guys who are fans, but I think that the fan thing layered on top. I like went on a date once with a fan who I did not realize was a fan.
How'd it go?
I think it went well. And I was actually interested in dating this person again. And like, it ended up not working out. And I like, since then I've been like, oh, I feel really like kind of icky about that situation because I actually liked this person. And I now look back thinking like, oh, I think maybe the only reason they went on this date with me was because they were a fan of Survivor and they like wanted to talk to me. Like, that just makes me feel like shit. And so I just like, I feel like maybe Steven wouldn't feel like shit from that situation. Yeah, but I do.
I guess I'm just more like pragmatic about what a date means. You know, like, for me, it's like all like what's, you know, it's an opportunity to establish a connection. And if someone comes in, you know,
But if somebody's coming in with these preformed thoughts of you, I think the chances of establishing a connection is rare because they already think they know who you are. And I think they're going to listen to so little of what you say during that conversation because in their mind, they're like here to like see what this Survivor person's all about. And I think that you're going in at a disadvantage. You like, it's hard to change people's perception of you.
So it's a greater challenge.
Yeah. Did Julia know that you were on Survivor the first date you went on with her?
I think she might have known just like through the, you know, my many pictures of being with Jeff Probst, right? But she definitely is not a Survivor viewer or fan, although now, you know, now she's into the show just because I forced her to watch it.
Yeah. Well, I would feel so proud of myself if I was ever single and then I got a date with somebody who didn't know I was on Survivor. I would really be like, wow, I can't believe it. Look at me. I got a date with somebody and they didn't even know that I was on Survivor.
That's cute.
I feel like that would be a real accomplishment. So good on you, Sophie.
Thanks.
All right. Well, what fun we had talking about all this stuff. We defined relationships. We talked about so many different things. So any other advice that you want to impart on people that you have the ear of all these people dealing with dating and relationship issues?
I don't think any advice. I think you should probably look to my Survivor cast member, Albert, for some better advice on very tactical dating issues.
He had a lot of good advice for you during Survivor South Pacific, right?
He did tell it. He would give us like little demos. It was always such bullshit things about like, I don't remember now, but I feel like it was a lot about like how to like stand next to somebody, how to like put your arm around them without them noticing. Like things that when I look back now, I'm like, so that creepy. Seems like somewhat like rapey. Mm-hmm. But like, I think his like dating field was more about like how to grind up on a girl in the club and not get arrested. Okay. Wow, that was not a purpose.
How to stand someone next to someone sounds like it could be useful. I don't know. I mean, you know, standing is hard
for a certain crowd. Yeah, I think it is. I think it'd be really cool if we got some people together from this dating podcast. So
that's the goal.
Yeah. I don't know how
we've already got someone on. Someone's already joined. Okay, this one of our callers today, right?
I want to hook our callers up together.
Yeah. Like we had one pair that we set up. I haven't heard how that went. And also, we have a 71-year-old lady in Hawaii who's looking for an older Stephen Fishback who we have not.
I know.
Found
I
yet.
Listened to that. That was cute. Rob, you should set up a I think as part of your next Know It All Live, you should have like a speed dating session.
Oh, that's fun.
For all rap listeners.
It should be speed dating, or it's sort of like we'll sit you at a table with like we'll find people. Mm-hmm. They like tell us what you're into. We'll put you sitting at a table with somebody, and that's the first date.
Yeah, I think maybe you should get a bunch of survivors to go and meet everybody, and then the survivors would be the matchmakers, and we would. Because I feel like people are. It's like OkCupid, right? When you're told that you're matched with somebody else, I think that there's a bigger chance that it's going to work out. So I think if Steven and I went in, we met everybody, we said, "Listen, like Jen and Steve, like you guys are made for each other."
Okay,
like two like a survivor talent. Like I think it could happen.
Steven, is it too late to do this for Boston? Could we get people that are coming to the Boston know-it-alls to write in?
I'm into it. Or what about like an online dating service? You know, Rob has an internet dating service. Our hates.
I don't know. It seems like a lot of work. Yeah. It's a lot of work for that. I mean, people are already coming to this thing, then we could just sit them together. I feel like that's
pretty easy. For Boston. I'm very into that idea.
Okay. All right. So we'll try to see if we can figure that out next week on the season finale of the Love Know-It-Alls. We're very excited, Sophie, that we are going to have the Doctor of Love here with us today. Dr. Mike Zahalski will be joining us next week on the podcast.
And literally, so if this is the three-act structure, that will be the literal climax.
Yes. He was tweeting the other day about the woman that called in last week or wrote in about how she was worried her husband might have low T. He was writing about if she's listening, she should go check Dr. Mike's Twitter because he had some answers with that. So get your questions in KIA@robiswebsite.com or robiswebsite.com/voicemail to leave a voicemail message. Actually, speaking of voicemail, one follow-up. This is from one of our listeners who wanted to speak to the person who wanted to know, should they swipe everybody?
Hi, Love Know-It-Alls. This is Ted from Toronto. And I want to respond to Kevin, who asked whether he should swipe right on everybody. Kevin, by God, do not do that. Tinder assigns you what they call an ELO score based off of the way that chess players evaluate their skill level, and you're more likely to show up in people's feeds if you have a high ELO score. If you swipe right on everybody or if you swipe right on no one, you're not going to show up in a lot of people's feeds. So what I would suggest is if you've been affected already, then get a new account because that's the quickest way to fix that. Swipe in the 30 to 70% range and you'll show up in a better number of searches. Good luck, Kevin. Don't swipe right on everyone.
There you go.
Wow, that's probably the most pragmatic advice that we've had yet on this podcast.
Yes. So don't be an overswiper. Don't be an underswiper. You could be too picky. So good advice. All right, Sophie, so nice to get to catch up with you. I know you're even watching the Celebrity Big Brother. You say thumbs up for Celebrity Big Brother.
Thumbs up because it's fun, but I actually think that it's like not a great cast. I think a lot of these people, if they were not celebrities, they would not be casted. Like they're a little boring.
Sophie, on what date should you tell people you watch Big Brother?
Oh, that's the last thing you tell them.
6 months?
Yeah.
Does your boyfriend
wedding
know?
Day. Yeah, I've gotten him hooked, unfortunately.
Oh, he watches too.
Yes.
He watches too. We went to bed last night watching the live feeds. It's like the lowest of the low we're at right now.
Steven, Sophie has admitted before that she even has gotten her boyfriend to listen to the Big Brother podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Oh, yeah. That's next level.
Something even Steven Fishback will never do.
Yeah, I don't listen to the Survivor podcasts.
Yeah.
He tried to get me to rank. We do pools for all the reality shows. And he tried to get me to do my pool, like our draft for Celebrity Big Brother. And he didn't tell me that he had already listened to like Rob's preview show. And he knew 2 hours worth of information.
That's such a Sophie Clark move. You would 100% do that. So I'm
glad. You should
I'm
marry this guy,
that,
Sophie.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. And Sophie's even watching The Amazing Race, and she's rooting for Team Yale, Stephen.
Oh, how nice.
They work with us. They work with me.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I shouldn't say that. And, also Team Extreme.
Yeah. I used to ski against her. I know all the people on The Amazing Race this year.
Yes. And Cody and Jessica. This is like the season of Amazing Race for you, Sophie.
I know.
Yes.
And all three of those teams are doing so well. Oh, yeah. My God. It's such a good show.
Such a good show. Steven, how much money would they have to pay you to watch The Amazing Race?
I mean, not that much. I would probably watch for like $1,000. It seems like, right? I mean,
okay.
Are you guys excited for the Bachelor Olympics?
Do you watch that, Steven?
Yeah. I might watch that. Well, I like big competition shows. I love the challenge. You know, being such a challenge focused person myself, mm-hmm. I love it when they're all engaged in like crazy physical competitions.
Yeah. I've got too much going on with Celebrity Big Brother, but I know that Amy and Haley will have full coverage of the Bachelor Winter Games on reality TV Rehab Ups. Sophie, always a pleasure to have you on. You could follow Sophie G. Clark on Twitter. Sophie, are you tweeting anything interesting lately?
Sure I am. I'm sure. You'll have to follow me and wait.
Yeah. Sophie, are we still going to do a book club? when are we going to do that?
Yeah, of course we are. After all the... Did you not just hear me? Amazing Race, Bachelor, Bachelor Olympics, Big Brother. Right?
You don't need to tell me,
I know,
Sophie.
I'm too busy.
Okay. All right. Maybe this summer. Steven, would you join in or will you be too busy with your being a newlywed?
Wait, so I missed it because my connection is actually really bad down here. What did you say?
Audio book club.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yes.
I would be into that.
Okay. All right. So we'll see. We'll see. That was sort of noncommittal from Steven, Sophie.
Well, I just don't trust your guys' taste. I don't know. I don't want to be listening to some, like, I don't know, whatever terrible thing you would choose.
Omarosa's book. Yeah.
You can choose the first book, Steven.
Oh, you guys are in trouble.
All right. Steven, anything you want to let people know about?
No, just I want them to, you know, have a wonderful week.
And and what kind of questions should they write in for Dr. Mike?
It's Dr. Mike. You know what to ask. I'm a little nervous questions. Because try to
as somebody who has recently podcast with Dr. Mike. Dr. Mike is like Steven before the first date, where he's worked on a bunch of things that he wants to come in and talk about, and so he will come in with five or six stories that he is ready to tell.
He comes in hot.
He's coming in hot. Sophie, anything else you want to let people know about?
No, but I would love people to really grill Dr. Mike on why there's not like more focus on women's sexual health.
Okay.
I read some statistics the other day about like the amount of money that we spend on like erectile dysfunction versus the amount of money that you spend on like vulvodynia, and it's nuts. So I would love to, maybe I'll send in nuts. It's nuts. I just want to send in a testy question.
Okay. All right. So I'm sure Dr. Mike will have a lot to say about that. And then to take us out, the great closing theme of the Love Know-It-Alls from Will from America. Here it is. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
The hottest hunks are out. The hottest hunks are about to go to town. Like they've done the deed a million times.
Well, well, keep your shirts actually, on, guys.
They never really get laid at all. They're gonna blow you away.
Sophie, you like that song?
Yeah, I didn't need you guys to take your shirts off. That's fine.